Hello, my friend, and welcome to the 475th episode of The Sales Podcast. I'm Wes Schaefer, The Sales Whisperer, your host. Today, we've got fellow jiu-jitsu practitioner and consultant, entrepreneur, guru, Paul Maschetta. We're going to get into how you can master the six persuasion power levels. He is a super smart guy. We talk about the trifecta of power to perfect your persuasion. Say that fast 10 times. He's been in marketing 16 years now. This is actually an older episode that got lost, so I am bringing it back from the dead. I had the video, had the audio, don't know what happened. I think I changed sales team or VA teams around that time, so it has happened. This has happened two, maybe three times out of 475. So, hey, not too bad. But I do feel bad. It got jostled, but had the video up, so that was good. So people were watching through that. But we're going to go into, you know, what you do with leads if they don't play ball, how to take control of the sales situation, how to tap into their emotional hot buttons, and how to tap them out with a rear naked choke, an arm bar, all those good kind of things. But no, he is a good guy. You're going to enjoy the conversation. We get into awareness, authenticity, authority, aptitude, adaptability, articulateness, handling imposter syndrome, and like I said, the trifecta of power. As I mentioned before, if you want to grow your sales and you need some help on a weekly basis, come join me, theimplementors.com. Theimplementors.com. If you need me to come on site or even remote, but do it privately for you and your sales team, I do some consulting and team training like that. Just hit up, do the contact us page on thesaleswhisper.com, and we'll talk, see if it's a fit. Okay. But now we've waited a year, so let's bring on Paul. Paul Maschetta, all the way from New York. NLP, persuasion expert, marketing expert. You know what? You're a jiu-jitsu guy. So we're going to throw all that away, and we're just talking jiu-jitsu for the next 17 hours. Are you ready?
I'm always ready to talk jiu-jitsu, brother.
Very nice. Well, welcome to the show, man. How the heck are you?
Good, man. Very well. How about yourself?
I'm good. So I see some pictures here. I see a blue belt, but that was like 3 years ago. So what are you now?
Now I'm a purple belt. I've been a purple belt for about 3 years now, just a little over 3 years.
Very nice. So I have to be polite to you because that means you could probably whoop my butt.
You're still a blue belt, right?
Two stripe. Very, very slow learning two stripe blue belt.
How often are you training per week?
Oh, 5 to 6 days a week, man.
Oh, okay. That's a lot. That's yeah. Good, man.
My 21-year-old son just joined, so he's hooked.
Nice.
He's a beast. He's about 6 feet, all of 225, strong.
Is he athletic?
Very athletic. So much more athletic than I ever was, man. Oh my gosh. And then I'm 6'2". I'm down to about 215. Mm-hmm. So I still have technique and can take him. But I told him in the beginning, I'm like, dude, within 6 months, it's like, I don't want to be around him.
Yeah, I hear you, man.
But sure. It's fun, man. It's fun seeing him learn, and he appreciates it. So,
yeah, cool. And the fact that you do it together, you know, that's a big one because when, you know, I coach kids 7 to 12 years old, and, you know, a lot of times you see the parents on the sideline kind of coaching their kids or telling them what to do, and they've never been on a mat before.
Right.
And then I have a few parents that actually joined, so I'll see them later in the adult class, in the beginner class, and they understand now. You know, it's a totally different ball game when your child can relate to what you're doing and you can relate to what they're doing. There becomes a level of understanding and respect there that it's just a really good thing.
Yeah.
Definitely a good thing.
Yeah, when you're in the heat of it, right? Like, you know, you're watching a football game. Oh, the guy's wide open on the right side.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's also where that, you know, 250-pound linebacker was blitzing from, you know, and he just happened to look left instead. Give the guy a break.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's crazy, huh? You're in the middle of it, and, man, you forget a lot of things.
Yep.
You go back and watch a video, it's like, oh, that was right there. Oh, I could have slept him. Oh, I had an arm bar. Oh, my God, I'm an idiot. Like, you got to drill and drill and drill and drill to make this stuff second nature, huh? But I mean, that's everything in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I ran across your ads on persuasion, and that's what it piqued my interest, you know, because the same thing happens in sales. We do it all the time. And I tell people, it's like, my goal is to give you the courage and the confidence and the competence to say what you feel in the moment. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we all like hang up the phone or we get in the car and like, oh, I should have said this. Oh, I should have asked this. Oh, I should have replied a different way. Oh, I should have opened up differently. It would have set the tone a different way. I could have stayed in control. You know, we know this afterwards. You know, I've always said small hinges swing big doors.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you shot me a link and I'm linking to it now. The six traits revealed, the six power, the persuasion power levers. One day I'll get it right. Right.
Yes. Yes.
So talk us through this. How did you get started in this? I see your background. You've been in marketing, digital media for almost a decade, right?
Yep. Yeah. Marketing itself probably going on 15 years. So 2004, my best friend, godfather of my son, decides he wants to build an internet business. So he comes to me and he's like, I've been in sales my whole life. Sales is probably the only thing I've ever been good at. And so at the time I was in a sales position, I've always been a self-improvement junkie. You know, on my way to work and on the way back from work, I would listen to Tony Robbins on my CD player, or I would listen, you know, on my iPod as technology kind of evolved. Just always been involved in kind of bettering myself and learning. So my buddy comes to me, he's like, listen, I need to hire a copywriter, but I don't have the money to hire a real copywriter. And you've been in sales your entire life. So how would you like to write copy for me? And I didn't even know what he meant at the time. Like, I thought when somebody said a copywriter, I thought that was like, had to do with like book publishing, like copywriting, you know, the rights, the stuff that you own. And so he was like, no, what I need you to do is the same way that you sell to people, I need you to sell in print, right? And that's what the old school marketers call copy, salesmanship in print. Yep. So I started writing copy for him. His business took off. Today, that business is a multi-million dollar business with Dr. Steve G. Jones, who's one of the biggest hypnotherapists in the world, Dr. Joe Vitale from The Secret. And so I started writing copy and I started getting referrals from his customers and people that he was doing joint ventures with. And next thing I knew, I was like making so much money writing copy that I didn't need to have my job anymore. So now I said to myself, well, what would happen if I immersed myself in this like I did with all the other self-improvement stuff I did for my entire life and really became good at this? And so I started studying salesmanship, NLP, psychology, human behavior, what makes people tick. And along the way, I pretty much documented everything that I did. And then eventually I was like, let me turn these into courses. And so that's kind of how my business started. And so now, 10 years later, we have over 50 trainings in one capacity or another, whether they're just PDFs or fully built out masterclasses with video training, so to speak. I've trained over 10,000 customers at this point, and just really love doing it. So just eager to share as much as I can and try to help people master this thing called human communication.
I hear you, man. So for those that might be hesitant, I mean, what's the difference between persuasion and manipulation?
The intent of the end user. That is it. Because, okay, you know, it's, you know, I talk about persuasion kind of like a loaded gun. And I know a lot of people have different opinions on guns and firearms and, you know, taking that out of the equation. It's not really the gun, in my opinion, that does the dirty work or saves the life of somebody. It's the person who's pulling the trigger. And so it's kind of the same thing with persuasion and manipulation. You know, what you're trying to do is get into the mind of somebody else and present information to them in the most effective and efficient way possible that they respond to it in a favorable way. Now, whether that favorable way is going to benefit the both of you, whether it's only going to benefit you, really dictates whether or not it's persuasion or manipulation. So it's a very fine line there. It's just a matter of what the end goal is of the end user.
Right. I mean, can't I just lay out the facts? Like, look, my my car has better gas mileage, better towing capacity, more torque. The seats are hand stitched, you know, just so my car is a better car. So just, you should buy my car.
You could. And there's certainly a time and a place for that. But the reality is, as you know, being a sales expert, is that people buy based on emotion and then they use logic to justify.
Come on, man.
Decision. No, and we're that's all, pretty much no, what we do.
We're all rational.
Life. Like everything we, that's what we tell ourselves, right? And so the reality is, if we know that people are emotional first and logical second, we have to start with emotion, and we have to start from a place of emotion. And so we have to tap into their emotional hot buttons and kind of push those buttons, get them emotionally involved, and then we can use logic later to help them justify the decision. So, you know, the example that you gave, you know, if you know all these features and benefits about a car, but you don't know where the customer or the prospect, what they consider to be valuable among those different features and benefits, you could waste a half hour talking about something that they don't care about. Like if you got a guy that's just interested in how fast the car goes and you're talking about safety, you're going to lose him. Conversely, if you have a guy who's worried about the safety of his family and you're talking about, you know, the horsepower, you're going to lose that person. So you got to kind of figure out what they're interested in, where their value buttons are, get them emotionally involved, and then you can use your facts and your data and your proof to help them justify the decision and feel better about it afterwards.
Yeah, but how do we find that out, man? Everybody, they put fake information when they download your PDF. They just want to use the chat button on the website. And, you know, look, can I just get the price? Look, I don't want to answer all this. Just give me the price. You know, how do we get them to open up?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about, it depends on the type of situation that we're talking about. If it's a matter of getting them in front of us, you know, then we have to get them in front of us without talking about the price. So we need to dictate the direction of the conversation and move them toward getting in front of us so that we can then have that conversation and have the opportunity to present the value proposition to them before we start talking about price. And that's just a matter of, you know, as an expert salesperson, you always need to take control of the situation, because if you leave it to other people, the situation could unravel in such a way that it doesn't benefit anybody. They don't get what they want. You don't get what you want. And you, as the trained expert, kind of have to know the sequence that you have to follow in order for that to happen. Now, if the interaction doesn't involve a face-to-face communication, then there's a different process for that. And that process might not always involve holding out on the price or saving the price or not talking about it. But, you know, you have to demonstrate the value proposition there just in a different way.
So I've always said, you know, choose who to lose. So is it okay? Like if it's like, hey, I can't give you the price, so I know a little bit more about you. Well, fine, I'm going to go somewhere else. Should we just let them go?
It depends. It depends on what the customers or potential customers do in general when it comes to that particular business or market, right? And so, you know, I'm a firm believer in qualifying people. If we're talking about sales, like we want to make sure the person has the ability to say yes. We want to make sure the person has the money. We want to make sure it's the right fit for them. We want to make sure that they're actually a qualified prospect, right? And so if we have to weed out the people that are going to waste our time, and quite frankly, we're going to waste their time as well, I have no problem doing that. However, you know, there are situations where you have salespeople that could get frustrated with everybody that gives them a bit of resistance, you know, and then they're letting opportunities walk out the door, which isn't good either. So you kind of have to gauge, you know, in the business, in the market that we're dealing with, are people generally ultra resistant in the beginning, and then we have to kind of break down those barriers, or are they generally not resistant? And then, you know, it's just a matter of weeding out the people that are just going to be, you know, a little bit of a pain to deal with. So that's how I, you know, that's how I approach most of these things. Like for instance, in my jiu-jitsu academy, not only do I teach and coach young children, but I also have like a part-time sales gig that I do there, which is like something that I do really because I love to do it. I don't have to do it, but I enjoy doing it. And the process basically works like A person comes in, they've never trained before. This is for people that don't have experience, people that don't have any grappling experience whatsoever. I work with them for a half hour and I show them some basic fundamental stuff. Three things: how to get the fight to the ground, how to establish a dominant position, how to submit or subdue the other person. And then we put them into a beginner class for 60 minutes. We partner them up with the right person. I'm very selective with who I partner them up with. I want to make sure they're going to rapport with that person, that they're going to have similarities with that person. Maybe they have a similar background, maybe they a similar type of employment, so that it's an overall good experience. And I'll check in with them from time to time. And then at the end, I'll bring them in the office and I will present the membership to them and try to make them become a member. Now, the reality is when I book that initial appointment over the phone, there are certain people that will say, well, can you just tell me how much it is? Now, look, as you and I both know, jiu-jitsu is a very physically intensive thing. And if people have never done it before, they either don't know what to expect, and then when they try it, they're kind of overwhelmed by it, or they love it, or they think they know what they're going to expect, but they have no idea, right? So I can't leave that in their hands. If I just give them the price and let them conjure up whatever they think it might be, they might just disappear and I never see them again. And I never have an opportunity to make them a member, and they never have an opportunity to have that experience of getting a one-on-one session, learning something in 60 minutes, and really finding out whether or not this is something that they love. So I have to take control over that process. And if, like I said, if I didn't, nobody would benefit from it.
So how do you do that? Because I mean, jiu-jitsu is, it's more money than your, you know, $10 a month, cardio only little physique shop on the corner.
For sure.
And I had never done anything like it. I remember people just doing CrossFit, right? I'm like, $160, $140 a month. I'm like, are you out of your mind? Right. I'm at the $10 place, cause I gave a few referrals, and like, you know, all I needed was some free weights, you know, I bench, I squat, do the fundamentals, blah, blah, blah. You know, I joined LA Fitness years ago so I could swim, cause I trained for the Tampa Bay Frogman swim. So I needed a year round pool. So, but even that was only $20-something a month, you know, and my buddy, he nagged me for 6 months to go. I'm like, dude, look, I don't have 2 hours in the middle of the day and I ain't paying that kind of money. Come on. And I finally went and I was like, oh, dude, okay, I'm in. Yep. But how do you steer that conversation against a hard, you know, dumbass like me, you know, that's prejudging?
So, again, it really all that happens in the beginning. So all that happens during the initial interview when I sit down with the person and I determine why they walked in the door. Why did they pick up the phone, right? Like this phone right here, right? This iPhone, these things are like, what, $1,000 right now? I get one every couple of years, and every couple of years, it starts to break down on me, right? It just, things start to happen with it. It doesn't work the way it used to. You know what? I buy a new one, and I keep buying a new one, right? And the reason why I buy a new one is because I've attached an emotional value to that phone. Right. And so that's what everybody does. So everybody assigns an emotional value to something where they're willing to pay a premium if that emotional value is high enough. Right. And so it's a matter of presenting the difference between price and value. So to be honest with you, when I speak to people, again, I qualify them in the beginning and I figure out why they came through the door. Are they a former wrestler and they're looking to transition into something else? Are they there strictly for self-defense? Are they a UFC fan and they want to do something related to mixed martial arts, but they feel like this is the most practical? Like that's why I did it, right? Because I was a big UFC fan, but I was never an athletic guy, never played sports. I didn't really see myself doing boxing, kickboxing, but the grappling, I was like, oh, I think I could see myself doing that. That seems, you know, kind of practical to me. Let me try it out. So it's a matter of figuring out why they came through the door and then demonstrating based on the data and the information that you get from them, demonstrating the difference between the price and the value. And to be honest with you, I've never really had a qualified person give me a price objection to the Jiu-Jitsu Academy. I've had people give me price objections for other things that I've sold in the past, but not that. The only people that will give me a price objection are people that legitimately can't afford it, like maybe a college student, you know, somebody that just came here, was only here for the summer. They haven't gotten a job yet. They just wanted to try it out and see what it's like. But people that are really qualified to do it typically don't give me a price objection because they see the value in what we do for them.
Right. So let's look at a couple of things, because on the one hand, if your copywriting is good, right, if your marketing is good, if you're teeing things up properly ahead of time, only qualified prospects are showing up at your door, right? Mm-hmm. In an ideal world, right? You got great marketing, great advertising, boom, people are just self-selecting, stepping right in and happy. But others, you know, they, again, maybe they're curious. They maybe skipped some of the initial seasoning of your marketing. And so, you know, can we like role play a little bit or something? Because I know like our listeners are, they deal with this. They get the hard charging, you know, prospect, the bully. You know, and I wrote a blog post a long time ago. It's like, you know, we need a jab, right? That prospect is just, it's the bum rush, man. And like a jab, I mean, rarely is a jab a knockout punch, right? It's more just to get some distance, to maybe frustrate or maybe distract them. So boom, so the real hit, the real knockout blow can be delivered, mm-hmm. right? But when they are just pressing hard, because maybe, you know, I mean, a lot of these hard charging prospects could be a great customer. They're just, they've been burned before or whatever. And, you know, we don't want to just discard all of them, but we can't go in the ring toe to toe with everybody, right? We're going to get tired.
Yep.
So can you give an example or one of the six power levers? I mean, what can people do like today listening to this podcast to maybe make their sales a little bit easier?
So in my opinion, 80% of the sale is done before you ask for the sale, right? That's done in the meet and greet. That's done. I'm talking about a traditional sales situation here when I say meet and greet, right? So it's done during the meet and greet. It's done during the needs analysis. It's done during the part of the process where you're building rapport with the other person, asking them questions, finding out why it is that they're sitting in front of you, where they hold, where they place value, what they're interested in, what their hot buttons are, etc. So if you do your job right at during that part of the presentation, the ending part of the presentation becomes a lot easier, right? Especially when you have to go toe to toe with people, because if you go toe to toe, or if you try to go toe to toe with somebody that you haven't created a rapport with, it doesn't end well. But when you have created rapport with them, right? Like just think about like when you go toe to toe with your brother or your cousin or your best friend or somebody that you're really close to, like you can drive home a point to them and really kind of push them and get your point across without offending them because you have that relationship with them, right? Now, obviously you're not going to create that type of a relationship in such a short amount of time with a potential customer, but it is about trying to create a connection with them, right? And so the first thing that I teach people in the power lever, so there are six power levers, right? Awareness, authenticity, authority, aptitude, adaptability, and articulative ability. Not sure if that's a word, but I use it as a word to demonstrate my point. So the first one is awareness, right? So in order to be persuasive, you got to establish rapport with others, right? So how in alignment are you with their beliefs, thoughts, and values? How well do you know their desires, right? Their feelings? You got to listen carefully. How aware are you of the way you perceive the things that they're talking about, right? Because a lot of times you're going to have a different opinion on certain things that other people are talking about. So the first thing is awareness. You have to have an awareness of that person, you, and the context, environment, and the circumstance that we're talking about. Because those three things could drastically impact the way the interaction goes. If that makes sense.
Sure.
So next thing is authenticity, right? So most people have an internal BS meter. They can detect when you're not being real with them. And if they sense that from you, then the reality is that nothing else that you're going to say is going to matter, right? You could be aware, you could have authority, you could be the most articulate person, you could say all the right things, you could ask all the right questions, but if the person doesn't like you or they don't think you're real, you're going to have a problem. Now, what I tell people with that is you got to kind of find the balance between your authentic self and your persuasive self. Now, people tell me, well, what does that mean? Aren't I the same person all the time? No, you're not. If you really think about who you are as a person, most people, right, take on a slightly different role based on the environment that they're in, right? Like you're a totally different person when you're at a football game with your buddies than you are when you're in a meeting with your boss. At least I hope you would be, right? You act a little bit differently.
Maybe that's why I don't have a boss anymore. I wasn't different.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, in jiu-jitsu, for example, you know, one of the things that's great about jiu-jitsu is that I feel like a lot of the invisible things that happen in the real world that people don't really talk about really come to the surface on the jiu-jitsu mat. Right. So when you first enter an environment, especially if you're a man, you're always kind of looking around to see, well, who's in charge of who's the alpha, who's leading who. You don't need to figure that out when you step on a jiu-jitsu mat, because you look at the color of the belt and you automatically know who's at the top and kind of who's ranking below that, you know, based on the time that they've put in and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And you get to find out exactly the type of demeanor or temperament that somebody has the minute you shake hands with them and start rolling with them. It's about, again, finding the balance between your most authentic self and your most persuasive self, right? Getting into that zone where you're able to say the right things, you're able to listen, you're able to have the right tonality, you're able to have the right volume, the right pace, and all that kind of stuff. The third one is authority. Right. So in Cialdini's book, Influence, which is like 30 years old, you know, he talks about these different weapons of persuasion. Right. And in my opinion, the most powerful one that he talks about is authority. And the reason I say that is because for all the other things that he talks about, you kind of have to do things in order to make them work. So when we talk about scarcity, right, as we limit something, it becomes, as we make something less available, people want it more. Well, in scarcity, you have to restrict something, right? In liking people, you have to do things to get them to like you. In commitment and consistency, you have to get people to commit. You have to get them to be consistent. But with authority, it's really just a perception of who you are, right? Like if people perceive you as an authority, as an expert, they're more likely to listen to what you have to say. It's what happens when you go to the doctor. I mean, I go to the doctor here in New York. First of all, the doctor makes me wait. I have a 3 o'clock appointment. The doctor doesn't see me till 4 o'clock. You know, when he sees me, he gives me a 30-second examination. He tells me what's wrong with me. He writes me a script. I go get the script filled. I don't question him. I don't say, why'd you make me wait? I just take my medicine, literally, right? Why? Because he's a doctor. And unless it's a life-threatening disease, I'm not going to question him. I'm just going to accept that he's the authority, right? The next one is your aptitude. So the authority is about your perceived knowledge and expertise, and then your aptitude is about the real knowledge and expertise that you have. Believe it or not, those two things, they're not mutually exclusive, but they are two different things. So the way I explain that to people is like, you could be the greatest lawyer on the block. You could know everything there is to know about case law, right? You could cite like every single case in the history of man and how that case played out to back what you're presenting. But if you can't convince a judge, a jury, or at the very least your clients that you know what you're talking about, you're going to fail to maybe the less prepared person, right? So having authority and having people perceive you as an authority is one thing, and that's important. But then you have to actually be able to back up everything that you're doing, right? You have to be able to actually have expertise, knowledge, credibility on certain things, right? So that's your aptitude. Your aptitude also applies to your persuasion aptitude, like how good you are at reading people, how good you are at overcoming objections, dealing with resistance, etc. The next one is your adaptability. So how good are you about being flexible during the interaction with somebody, right? In my opinion, the most persuasive people and the best communicators are the ones that are able to take a step back, not take things personal, not get so wrapped up in their own thoughts and beliefs, because as humans, we're just trained and hardwired to defend our beliefs, even if they're not real and even if they're not validated. So you as the expert have to realize that we're conditioned to do that. You have to learn how to not do that and how to adapt based on the awareness that you have in stage one and what you're getting back from the other person. And then last is your articulative ability. So how masterful are you at articulating your message? Do you have command over the English language? Do you use words carefully? Do your words convey action and vitality? Do you make an effort to add new and interesting information when you're speaking to people? You were vocal fillers like you know, I was really, really bad with that. I used to use vocal fillers all the time. And one time I was on a teleseminar many years ago, and the guy who's recording the teleseminar, he made like a, almost like a mixtape afterwards of all the vocal fillers that I used. And it was like 30 minutes of me going, and I was like, wow, like I sound terrible. And so I trained myself to stop doing stuff like that. I became cognizant and consciously aware of what I was doing, and I made it my business to stop doing that. That's your articulative ability. How good are you at taking what's in here, all that knowledge and expertise that you have, and executing on it verbally?
Right. Very cool.
Yep.
So let's go back to this aptitude. So I know something that most people suffer from, at least honest people, I think, is the imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. right? It's like, we're actually very good, but we don't feel like jiu-jitsu, man. Oh, like, I feel like I should have zero stripes. I feel like I should be like a student, like a child green belt, right? Like, no, yep. you're progressing. Like, I'm an idiot. I'm no good, you know? And so, cause that impacts greatly, right? Our aptitude, somebody, like you say, an attorney, they're great. They number one in their law class, but they feel like, I was number one at like the small school. I wasn't number one at Harvard, you know? So they beat themselves up. How do we get over that?
That's a good question. How do you get out of your own head?
Yeah.
You know, every jiu-jitsu belt that I got, well, so the last two that I got, I didn't think I deserved, especially the purple belt, because the blue belt took me a little bit longer to get. It took me about a year and a half to get that belt. And the purple belt I got after just 2 years of being a blue belt. So I got that one relatively fast. And when I got that belt, so I have a training partner, but he has a year more experience than I do. And so he had already been a blue belt for a year when I had gotten mine, but we got our purple belts together. And we train all the time, 3 days a week minimum, consistently, and we got promoted together. And like in my mind, I was saying to myself, you know what? He was due for the promotion, but we trained together, so we were promoted together. And I honestly thought that I was promoted prematurely. But knowing that my professor would never do that because he's just not that guy, and I've never seen him do it to anybody else, but I got in my own head. And I actually went home that night and I was like, man, this is so much pressure now. You know, now I have to show up. I got promoted on Tuesday. I was like, now I need to show up on Thursday and I need to tap every blue belt. Like, I can't have a blue belt get the better of me now. And God forbid a white belt gets the better of me. But as time went on and I gained more and more experience and more mat time, my confidence began to grow. And I talked to a black belt who was actually my professor's first black belt. And I told him how I felt. And he said, Paul, I felt that way every time I got promoted. You grow into your belt. And that's exactly what happened. So I think it first starts with, you know, you have to have a certain attitude about who you are as a person, right? And some people have an attitude that is just like, when I say attitude, I don't mean attitude like you're nasty with people. I mean, just how you perceive yourself and how you approach certain situations. Some people are optimists with everything that they do, and some people are pessimists, and some people are optimists with things that they feel they're really good at and ultra pessimist with things that they don't feel they're really good at. So you begin with that. For me, I've always believed that even if I'm pessimistic about something, I lie to myself. And I just start telling myself, no, you got this. You could do this. It's okay. You're going to get better at it. Because I say to myself, I'm a total believer in the way that you talk to yourself has a huge impact on kind of a direction that your life goes in. So whenever I used to find myself doing that, I would just start talking myself out of it. You know, when I walk my dog every morning, I say a little prayer. I'm not a heavily religious person, but I say a little prayer. And then I have these affirmations that I say to myself, you know, about 10 to 15 of them that I just say in my head. When I first started doing them, they felt weird. They felt kind of silly. But I said to myself, what's the downside of me doing them? Like, no one's hearing me doing them. I'm doing them to myself. And now they feel really natural to me. So the first thing is about approaching it with a positive attitude and kind of lying to yourself a little bit, right? Having that voice inside of you. And then the second thing is, look, as you do something, no matter what it is in life, as you do it and you get better at it, you're going to get more confident in it, right? The only reason you're doubting yourself is because you're imagining a situation unfolding that you're not prepared for. That's all it really is. You're in your mind, you're like, well, what if this happens? And what if that happens? But as you gain more experience, you actually go through those things and you learn how to deal with them. And you realize that everything's going to be okay. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. You didn't die from it. Life goes on and you become more confident.
Yep. Amen. Just got to stick with it, huh? It helps having a good partner. Right.
Absolutely. It absolutely does. Yep. I tell people all the time, that was a game changer for me, having a, you know, a partner that is always texting you, calling you, hey, you're going to be there tonight. You have those days where you don't want to get off the couch, but he's like, hey, I'll be there. So then you get up and you go do it. Absolutely. It is.
Yeah. And having that, and you know, like, man, I've been going through some stuff. I don't know if I've got food allergies or what. I got a physical coming up and haven't dive into it. Just I've been more tired than normal. Like I went to jiu-jitsu yesterday and Tuesdays we do no gi. And I was dragging, man. And our regular guy wasn't there. Another black belt was teaching and he does it a little differently. So we were kind of gathered around and we were stretching as he was kind of teaching. And I literally almost fell asleep. I was just that tired. I'm like, man, you know what? I'm just going to drill. And then I'm going to leave before sparring. Cause it's like, I'm tired and there's some couple new guys. They're kind of overly aggressive because they're new and like, and they're big. So I always get paired with them. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, don't be a wimp, you know, get a couple in at least. And I did. And sure enough, the new young guy, I got paired with him first. I'm like, oh hell, here we go. You know? And I did fine. Right. Mm-hmm. I didn't tap him, but I controlled him, pulled him in the guard, just made his life hell. He was frustrated, right? And I was like, all right, hey, I survived, right? I was at what I felt like was 10%, you know, and I rose to the occasion. All right, and then I fought another guy, and then I had to leave early anyway because I did have an interview coming up. So, but I got two hard rolls in, right? Not two easy ones, mm-hmm. Not zero. I was like, damn, all right. It's and I recognize it's like that as I do tournaments, man, you're tore up, right? Like you're putting everything on the mat. Like, man, I can't go another second. Like, oh my gosh, I still got 4 minutes. Like, but it prepares you, right? But I will only go that hard if I have somebody else there with me.
Yeah.
You know, I never like working out at the gym. I'd still go. I wouldn't miss a workout, but I'd have half-ass workouts, so I wasn't getting much out of them, you know. So is that do we get that in your programs? I mean it sounds self-serving, right? But it's like that's why I teach my 30-day sales growth and your programs, is because it's lonely, right? Are you at a home office?
Are you working? No, I have a separate office space that I rent out.
Okay.
To get out of the house because I need a place to go and escape and focus and do only my work. So
yeah, I mean I've worked from home since the summer of 2000, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of salespeople do because they're traveling, a lot of entrepreneurs. So, I mean, are you giving them that outlet? So at least they know they're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't done one-on-one coaching in a while. We're thinking about bringing back some group coaching because a lot of people have been asking for it. So I can get my assistant to get you out a link for that if they want to learn more about that. But for the most part, you know, we're always there for them support wise. You know, I send people if they buy one product from me, they get my personal email address where they can, you know, shoot me an email and just say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Or I'm having this kind of an issue in my life. And I get random stuff, you know, like, I can't get my son to take out the garbage. What's the best way for me to approach him on something like that? You know? So yeah, for sure. Having somebody there to help you and push you is a big one. Absolutely.
Yeah. Very cool, man. So I am linking to your free PDF you're giving. Anywhere else we should direct people? I mean, where can they find you? Where can they interact?
Yeah, so you could check me out on influenceacademy.net.
Okay.
You can also check out my YouTube channel. If you just Google Paul Massetta YouTube, it'll come up. We have just about over, I think, 15,000 subscribers now, over 100 videos on there. I've been putting videos up there since 2011, 2012. It's definitely I tell people that's probably the best resource if they really want to learn influence, persuasion, storytelling, how to read body language, psychology, NLP, because it's just, you know, it's almost 10 years of stuff that I've been putting up there. So definitely check that out. And like I said, influenceacademy.net. Also, when you opt into my email list, you get put into a sequence, which is kind of like a beginner sequence where I teach you something called the trifecta of power. The trifecta of power is the three go-to things that I use when I need to effectively communicate. And it consists of storytelling, metaphors, and analogies. And so after you opt into the email list, you'll get a PDF every single day with a lesson in it that will explain to you how to master all three of those things.
Very nice. I just pulled up your YouTube channel. So that was the music everyone just heard a second ago. So let me see here. Oh, there you are. Looking, man, you look so mean, man. You're a lot nicer than you look in your pictures.
Yeah.
The art of street persuasion. Very nice, man. So is this going to help me like walk on fire and stuff?
I can't help you there. I can't help you with walking on fire, but the Street Persuasion is another book that I sell. That's the one that I've been selling on Facebook, and that one's not so much a training or a learning course type of format. It's a tactical guide. So that book has 101 ways to persuade others in what I call real life situations. So they're a little unconventional and they're a little bit different than some of the stuff that you would read in a typical traditional persuasion book.
And so like in the bonus chapters, is it like when all else fails on street persuasion, do you teach like wrist locks, arm bars, rear naked chokes, things like that?
Wrist locks, not really wrist locks. I would say head and arm chokes. And that's my go-to. I don't mind playing off my back, and I'll usually start every roll off my back, but all my submissions are from the top.
Nice.
So, you know, arm locks from the top, head and arm chokes. I'm a leg locker, like leg locks. So, stuff like that.
Nice. Yes. All right.
Yeah.
I love it. All right, Paul, all the way from New York, man. Thanks for coming on the show. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to doing another one.
Look at you being all persuasive, like projecting the future. Huh? Who do you think you are, man? All right, man. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
You have to agree that's good stuff, because if you tell Paul it's not good stuff, he'll leg lock you. He'll choke you out. You know, so just go along to get along. All right. But do check out the six persuasion power levers, the Influence Academy. His YouTube channel, just all kind of good stuff. You know, great guy. Had fun getting to know him. And you know, the influence, you know, the book he mentioned, Influence by Robert Cialdini, is awesome. But the way he is leveraging that and applying that is why he is successful. So listen to this again, take notes and apply. Okay. I kid a lot about jiu-jitsu, reference it a lot, but it's so applicable. Guys come in all the time. They've been watching their YouTube videos, And it just doesn't work the same when you do it against an opponent. Even in drills, like we'll learn a new move in drills when you have a cooperating partner. But as soon as they start resisting, man, it's hard. You know, the key is to add these little tools to your repertoire over time. And what happens is you go for, you know, move number one or two or three. And as your opponent, you know, resists one of those, boom, all of a sudden move 5 or 10 or 25 presents itself. But taking the time to practice, drill, and rehearse so you can master this, you know, make it second nature, that is just, it's so fundamental, but very few people want to put in that kind of effort. And it shows. Okay, it takes time to master these things. Paul's been doing this 16 years now. I've been in sales since 1997. I've owned the Sales Whisperer since 2006. I'm still learning, still testing, still growing, still sliding back sometimes, but get back up, do it again. Okay. That's why I have the implementors.com. Come join me there to help you keep going. Okay. It's a month to month program, on demand content, live weekly calls, private group, ask questions at any time. You get half off if you do it for the year. All right. Invest in yourself here at the end of the year. Invest in yourself. Commit to yourself to do whatever it takes to grow. And you'll be benefiting from that. You'll be rewarded for the effort. All right. I'll be there with you every step along the way. TheImplementors.com. Thanks for listening. I'll go sell something.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.